Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service and the Associated Press. Our first article was published by the Religion News Service on the 9th of October and written by Bob Smetana and Aleha Hertzler McCain. Nuns on the bus tour members say, God wants everyone to thrive, so vote accordingly. Chicago. After 6 years without hitting the road for a political advocacy tour, the nuns on the bus are back, and this time they have brought friends along for the ride. Organized by Network Advocates for Catholic Social Justice, the cross-country tour kicked off on September 30 in Philadelphia and will end in San Francisco on October 18 after visiting 20 cities. The bus tour is a follow-up to what had been an annual affair between 2012 and 2018, with the exception of 2017, as the sisters called for immigration reform, a living wage, improvements to health care, and an end to wealth inequality and polarization. For the 2024 tour, Network, the nonprofit founded by Catholic sisters in 1971, is citing Pope Francis and calling on Catholics and other people of goodwill to be multi-issue voters. The message stands in contrast to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops' guidance that the threat of abortion should be Catholic voters' preeminent priority. On October 8, the bus carrying the sisters and their friends pulled up outside the former rectory of St. Agnes Parish to visit the Circle Resource Center, a women's community center in Chicago's Brighton Park neighborhood. The two dozen or so riders, a mix of Catholic women religious and representatives of Protestant and secular groups, toured the center before holding a news conference by the front stair. Sister Sally Duffy, a member of the Sisters of Charity from Cincinnati, launched into the group's mantra, which was repeated by speakers and writers over the next half hour or so. Everybody thrives, she said, followed by the writers answering, no exceptions. The idea of the visit and the bus tour was to get past partisan talking points and focus on the values many Americans share and on solutions that benefit everyone. It's so important to us because it's the gospel message, said the 75-year-old Duffy in an interview. Sister Alicia Gutierrez, executive director of the Circle Resource Center, said the former rectory, once in ill repair, had been transformed into a place where people can belong. Many of the women who attend programs at the Circle are immigrants, seeking a place to belong as they find their way in a new country. We wanted to have a place for the women who need friends to keep their hope in this country alive, said Gutierrez, a member of the Society of Helpers. She said the center became a place of love and community. The Reverend Leslie Copeland Toon, Senior Associate General Secretary of the National Council of Churches and one of the friends accompanying the nuns, said that stops on the tour, like the one at the center, have been a kind of prayer, connecting advocacy work to the power of ordinary people's stories. Issues such as immigration or domestic violence take on a human face, she said. It fuels the activism because you understand what's at stake, what's needed, and it helps you to tell their stories, she said. Toon helped facilitate a town hall meeting held on Tuesday night in the basement of Old St. Patrick's Church at the west end of Chicago's Loop. About 150 people, including several dozen women religious from Chicago and beyond, gathered for a meeting that was part Get Out the Vote rally, part deep policy dive, and part Sunday school lesson, with the sisters and their friends urging the audience to put their faith in action when they vote. Although Illinois is not a swing state, Network hopes to grow its presence there. The sisters led the audience through what Network calls the Equally Sacred Checklist, a collection of six freedoms that connect faith to voting issues. These freedoms include the freedom to be healthy, to participate in vibrant democracy, to be safe from harm, to care for ourselves and our families. Speakers urged attendees to not be distracted by misinformation or partisan feuds, but to instead vote for politicians who would help bring those freedoms to life. Though described as a nonpartisan event, it was clear where most of the speakers stood on the presidential election and other national races. "I cannot tell you who to vote for," said Sarah Christofferson, a former congressional staffer and tax justice advocate. "But what I am allowed to tell you is what members of Congress did." "What Republican members of conference did," said Christofferson, "was allow a temporary expanded child tax credit to expire in 2021. While in place, that credit had been a key tool in fighting childhood poverty," added Christofferson. Sister Catherine Darcy of the Sisters of Mercy of the Americas, who told RNS her worries about Christian nationalism prompted her to join the bus tour, warned the audience of the dangers of ideology, which she said claims America belongs to Christian men, and especially wealthy Christians, not to all Americans. "Christian nationalism is pitting ordinary Americans against one another," said Darcy. "And it is also manipulating persons of faith big time." Duffy, who, like Darcy, works on immigration issues, took on misinformation spread about Haitian immigrants in her home state of Ohio, saying Haitian immigrants had helped revitalize the city of Springfield, Ohio, and were trying to build a better life for themselves. She rebuked politicians who spread false rumors about immigrants eating pets. "Those rumors were meant as a distraction and aimed at turning Americans against one another and against immigrants," she said, adding, "People are trying to make us hate them." The sister was having none of it. "Hate never made this country great," she said. "What makes our country great is love and compassion, and we can vote that in November." The Nuns on the Bus tour is the first without Sister Simone Campbell, a sister of social service who led Network for nearly 17 years as executive director. Campbell, who was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Joe Biden, launched the first bus tour in 2012 to oppose budget cuts proposed by Republican Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan. But this year, without Campbell, the sisters are being joined by ecumenical and secular partners, including representatives of the Friends Committee on National Legislation, Gamma Liel, Coalition on Human Needs, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, Freedom Road, Sojourners, Faith in Action, the National Council of Churches of Christ in the USA, and the Children's Defense Fund. The inclusion of partners on the bus tour mirrors a broader trend in the life of women religious in the U.S. As communities of sisters are aging and gaining fewer members, they are increasingly partnering with laypeople to continue their ministry. After Campbell's retirement, Network is currently led by Mary Novak, the first layperson to serve as executive director. Among those in the audience Tuesday night were Sister Cecilia Cavanaugh, a former college professor and Catholic school teacher from Philly, and Liz Ryan, one of her former students. Cavanaugh, who took part in a 2020 virtual Nuns on the Bus tour, a series of Zoom meetings around the country, had come to Chicago, now Ryan's home, for a reunion with former writers. Ryan said the event had given her a sense of hope. "One takeaway was that We can all be kind. We can live in a world where we can all thrive. No exceptions, she said. I believe that, and I've always believed that. But to be here and a part of this, it reaffirms your faith and your belief in humanity. Those were lessons, along with learning how to diagram sentences, Ryan said she learned from Kavanaugh, who taught her in grade school and middle school at Resurrection of Our Lord Catholic School in Northeast Philadelphia. Kavanaugh said she was pleased to hear that some of the lessons she taught all those years ago had stuck. She also said the sisters were involved in both policy work and on-the-ground ministry. All these sisters, they're up to their hips in good work, she said. Many of them were also older and retired, freeing up their time to get involved in activism and what the late congressman and civil rights activist John Lewis called good trouble. We're getting older, but it's freeing, Kavanaugh said. People have to take more time to volunteer and get into more trouble. That's what we should be doing. Now an article published by the Associated Press on September 29, written by Deepa Barath. Conservative Christians were skeptical of mail-in ballots. Now they are gathering them in churches. Menifee, California. With Election Day just a few weeks away, longtime church members Lucky Hartunian and Janie Booth sat outside the Revival Christian Fellowship Sanctuary in Menifee, California, inviting congregants to register to vote. The women urged those streaming into the Evangelical Church's Saturday morning civic engagement event to make their voices heard as Christians. After mail-in ballots go out statewide, Booth and Hartunian will be among church members collecting completed sealed ballots and dropping them off at the county office the next day. It's a practice known as ballot gathering or ballot harvesting that's been a source of national controversy over the years. Booth said her task is a big responsibility, but she's not nervous. A lot of people don't trust the mail, she said. So I feel honored and privileged to do this. I'm doing this for my kids and grandkids. Dramatic change of course. Conservative voters who have been skeptical of mail voting and ballot gathering, a strategy often used by Democrats, are now warming up to it. Evangelical Christians in particular are embracing it this year. Leading conservative figures Charlie Kirk and Republican National Committee co-chair Laura Trump have called on Christians and conservatives to collect ballots. Megachurches like Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, and Southern California are leading the charge, urging, even training, congregations to collect ballots. They praise it as a valuable tool to raise voter turnout and elect candidates who align with their views on issues such as abortion, transgender rights, and immigration. Robert Tyler, a California-based attorney who represents conservative churches and pastors, said he still believes ballot harvesting and universal vote by mail creates opportunities for fraud. But the rules of the game have changed, he said. Until the law changes, we have to get out and gather ballots like they are doing. To be clear, there's been no evidence of widespread fraud in any state related to mail voting. Some isolated cases of potential fraud involving ballot collections have been caught and prosecuted. Tyler's comments reflect a dramatic change of course for conservatives, some of whom amplified rumors about mail ballots to explain Donald Trump's 2020 loss. Republican leaders see it as necessary if they are to be in competition in an election this year that is likely to be decided by thin margins in a few swing states. Trump has long criticized this voting method as rife with fraud, an unfounded assertion. Now he and other top GOP officials are encouraging voters to cast their ballots by mail. The party has launched an effort to correct the narrative on mail voting to coax those who were turned off to it by Trump to reconsider for this year's election. The practice of ballot gathering, where individuals chosen by voters return mail-in ballots on their behalf, is legal in 35 states, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. Rules vary, but in California, where there is no limit on how many ballots a single person can collect, a collector cannot be compensated and must turn in the ballot in person or by mail within 3 days of receiving it, or before polls close on election day. Training churches to gather ballots. Gina Gleason, executive director of California-based Real Impact, a ministry of Calvary Chapel Chino Hills, said she saw how Southern California Democrats used the strategy to get their congressional candidate elected by a narrow margin in 2018. In 2020, her church began collecting ballots every Sunday in the weeks before Election Day. Voters handed their signed and sealed ballots to us, she said. We placed them in lunch lockboxes and personally turned them over to the county offices where they needed to go. The initiative was somewhat successful in 2020 when the church collected about 6,000 ballots. In 2022, that number rose to well over 13,000, Gleason said, adding that while most ballots were from church members and their families, some were from members of other churches who drove to Chino Hills to submit their ballots. This is the kind of impact we're looking for that can flip school boards and make a difference in our communities by changing laws we don't want to live under, she said, citing a law signed by Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom to prevent schools from outing transgender and gay students to their parents. We don't want the government telling us what we can or cannot do when it comes to health and safety of our children. When she trains church volunteers, Gleason includes key instructions like making sure the outside envelope is filled out correctly and ballots are returned to the appropriate registrar's office. Her church collects ballots from residents of Orange, Los Angeles, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties in Southern California. And of course, no one should be electioneering or telling people whom or what to vote for, she said. Over the summer, Gleason trained more than 120 people from various churches who are now ready to collect ballots, including the one in Menifee. She and Pastor Jack Hibbs, who leads her church, have been traveling the state on their Comeback California tour with the goal of getting Christians energized and engaged. Conservative groups hope these initiatives will proliferate in other states. Timothy Head, executive director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, a conservative political advocacy nonprofit, said ballot gathering is gaining traction among once reluctant churches in competitive states such as Nevada and Virginia. He calls it the crawl, walk, run effect. We expect it to significantly increase this time. Every vote counts, and every effort to maximize votes counts. Plus, churches are natural choices, he said. Congregations gather at least once or twice a week. As long as they are not explicitly partisan, it is a great place where voters can get civically engaged. Hibbs spoke forcefully during the church event in Menifee, urging Christians to take a stand. That doesn't mean I want a Christian nation, he said. I just want our country to be a place where a devout believer and an atheist have the same rights. He ended his discourse by telling his audience that Trump may have gotten a little wiggly and wobbly on abortion and told them to forget Trump's rhetoric and shenanigans, the crazy and off-color talk. Fewer children will die under Donald Trump than under Kamala Harris, he said, referring to abortion. So that's how I'll be voting. The audience burst into applause. One man yelled out, "Yeah, Trump." The issue of trust. Richard Hazen, who leads the Safeguarding Democracy Project at the University of California, Los Angeles School of Law, said he is not aware of credible allegations of fraud involving ballot gathering. He would still prefer that states set limits on the number of ballots that can be collected. It's low risk, but not no risk. And the fact we haven't seen major problems is a good sign, he said. Still, anytime people get together to vote, you want to make sure they are making free and fair choices, whether that place is a church, nursing home, or union hall. Former Orange County Registrar Neil Kelly believes ballot gathering can help increase voting, but has not made a big dent on elections so far. He also is not too worried about ballot tampering, which is one concern critics have raised in the past regarding the practice. The general public doesn't understand all the ways we have to determine that ballots have been tampered with, he said. We can tell when envelopes have been opened and resealed. If votes are being changed, we'll see a pattern. Ada Briceno, chairperson of the Orange County Democratic Party, said ballot gathering allows more people to vote, especially in communities of color where people are working two or three jobs or may struggle with language issues. We want more people to have their voices heard, and this is just one more tool, she said. Republicans were the ones who were all upset about turning in mail-in ballots, and now they're doing it. It's just hypocritical. The Reverend Samuel Rodriguez, president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, who has advised Trump, said he sees nothing wrong with churches gathering ballots. If other community groups are doing it, why not churches? He said. I have no doubt that churches will make sure everything is done legally and correctly because they have a higher level of accountability and that moral compass of integrity, more so than any other community group. Our last piece is an excerpt from one written by Ellie Davis, published by RNS on September 27. In a time of questioning, younger Jews turn to their faith's contemplative side. Elul, the current and final month in the ancient Hebrew calendar, it's a time of introspection, preparation, and forgiveness as Jews prepare for the high holidays. First, the New Year celebration of Rosh Hashanah, followed by Yom Kippur, the Day of Repentance. In this time, Jews often blow the shofar, a trumpet fashioned from a ram's horn, to end morning services and recite Psalm 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? At morning and evening prayers. But Cantor Lizzie Shamash, who leads online yoga classes from her Pennsylvania home for the Institute for Jewish Spirituality, an online community and think tank, believes that Elul's introspection and even shofar blasts can be for anyone. During the month of Elul, you can take account of your soul, she said. The shofar is a powerful spiritual alarm to wake us up, to develop our capacity, to maintain an open heart and awaken from any spiritual slumber so we can live our most meaningful life. This month, Shamash's yoga classes are part of the Shofar Project, a program at the Institute designed to inspire attendees to delve deeper into their spiritual practices during Elul. It offers weekly sessions, readings, and yoga practices that emphasize the tradition of self-reflection, all of them open to people of all backgrounds. Founded 25 years ago as a way for rabbis to reconnect to their spirituality, the Institute for Jewish Spirituality counters the notion that the Jewish faith is a religion of dietary rules and traditions, instead treating it as a deeply spiritual practice that accommodates and even deepens mindfulness practices, such as meditation and yoga. Over the past two decades, as these practices have been imported into mainstream society, largely through interest in Eastern faiths such as Hinduism and Buddhism, the Institute and other organizations such as AuraLove have emerged to offer resources for those seeking a mindfulness based on contemplative Jewish practices. The Institute for Jewish Spirituality hosts daily meditations and teaches prayer, contemplative Torah study, yoga, singing, and working with midot, characteristic traits. In her classes, Shamash incorporates Torah text as well as readings from the Zen rabbi Alan Liu. During Elul Shofar project, she works from the week's theme, whether opening the heart or hearing the pain of the world, for her yoga classes that draw around 100 attendees. It's about bringing spiritual themes into an embodied practice, she said. While open to all, Jewish spirituality programs have begun to attract Jews seeking new ways of connecting with their Jewish identity. Dori Haber, a 37-year-old reading specialist in Manhattan, associates her childhood in Cleveland with her Jewish identity, from spending time in her Reform synagogue to Jewish summer camp, where there was no talk of Jewish spirituality. But when she moved to New York City after college, she, like many other adults, found she didn't have a religious place like a synagogue or camp to call home. Joining a congregation felt expensive, Haber told RNS. In Manhattan, a synagogue membership can cost several thousand dollars. Instead, she found a free meditation class at the Jewish Community Center near her apartment and began to explore a strictly Buddhist approach to the practice at the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York. But eventually, her meditation practice brought her back to Judaism. She attended a meditation retreat led by Jewish mindfulness teacher Rebecca Schisler, whom Haber had followed for years. My practice started at the JCC, then went to Buddhism, and now has come back to Judaism a little bit, she said. They're all connected. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll listen again next time. This is Mary Grace Payton reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.